Clerk, would you please call the next case?
3250182,
Board of Education of Winfield School District 34,
Appellant,
and
Board of Education of Community High School District 9, Board of Engineering, Jason Manning, 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 J The appellate court again rejected this argument and affirmed summary judgment for the school district, citing substantial private development interest without the need for TIF assistance. What these two cases teach us is that the village's interest, the village's actions or desire for a TIF, and do not matter as a matter of law with respect to the but-for test under the TIF Act. I also, in reviewing the village's brief preparing for today, found it remarkable that the village is fully endorsing this concept, and they've taken the position, for instance, on page 21 of their brief, that for the village, the development agreement with CDH was only worthwhile because CDH agreed to put tax-exempt parking properties on the tax rolls, thereby making TIF funds available to accomplish the village's goals. Again, these arguments are disconnected from the underlying purpose of the TIF Act, which is focused on, does the developer need a TIF in order to proceed with its development? The answer to that question in this case is a resounding no, and the village has admitted that in their brief and on summary judgment. The developer here, CDH, expressly agreed it did not need TIF assistance to proceed, and it had begun all of its development activities under the development agreement began 14 months before the village created TIF 2. If the trial court's ruling and its focus on the village's desires, intentions, and role in negotiating the CDH development agreement is allowed to stand, it will turn the but-for test on its head and render meaningless this critical statutory safeguard. Any municipality could take the same position the village is taking here that the municipalities took in Burr Ridge and Castle Properties, and argue that all that matters is that the village wanted a TIF, even if there is development interest or activity occurring without the need for TIF assistance to the developer. That cannot be what the General Assembly intended when it wrote the but-for provision into the TIF Act. The trial court, in focusing so exclusively, really, on the village's desire and intent, erred also in adopting a combined implementation theory, the theory being that the village wanted to adopt TIF 2, and therefore it doesn't matter that they waited 14 months after this development started, and this was a combined implementation, and that should be read into as an exception into the but-for test. But again, as we cite in our brief, it's error to read exceptions in the plain statutory language of a statute. The TIF Act is not concerned with how or why the growth or development occurred. The only question is whether the TIF district was needed in order for private investment and development to move forward. I would also note that the notion of a combined implementation adopted by the trial court simply isn't supported by the undisputed facts in the record. As I mentioned earlier, this TIF district was created 14 months after the development agreement was signed in September of 2020. It's a $90 million redevelopment project. It involves four standalone retail buildings, two mixed-use properties, and a host of other development commitments from CDH involving landscape, public utilities, etc. All of that began and commenced, and the village has admitted in deposition testimony and at summary judgment that CDH's obligations would continue under the development agreement even if TIF 2 had never been adopted. There were no promises to CDH, and CDH expressly disavowed any need for TIF assistance. I would also note, with respect to this combined implementation theory that has been advanced in the trial court by the village and again on appeal, that there is no reference to the CDH development agreement or combined implementation in the village's TIF 2 ordinances or the redevelopment plan. And the village admits that they approved the CDH development agreement despite the fact that TIF 2 was not even politically viable at the time. We also adduced evidence in the trial court that it was clear that in September of 2021, 12 months after the development agreement was signed, the village was still considering other options besides TIF 2, including leaving the 51 parcels that they created TIF 2 with, in an earlier TIF District 1 and seeking a 12-year extension from the General Assembly, as the village should have done, rather than the DTIF-RETIF maneuver, which they've utilized in this case, which is a separate issue we raise on appeal. I'll address later if I have time. Bottom line is there's simply no record support for a finding of a combined implementation in this case, nor is the notion of a combined implementation recognized in the statutory language, nor is it recognized in any appellate court decision analyzing the TIF Act. The trial court, with respect to the but-for test, the trial court also erred in presuming that a portion of one building constructed by CDH would have been exempt from property tax, but for the negotiated concession by CDH to agree not to seek tax-exempt status for a portion of the building, that being the parking deck. As an initial matter, it's legal error to presume that property tax, that a property would be exempt. We know that from our own Illinois Supreme Court precedent, the Oswald v. Hammer case, which we cite in our brief. Quote, under Illinois law, taxation is the rule, tax exemption is the exception. And as that Oswald case teaches us, taxpayers, in order to obtain an exemption, a taxpayer has a high burden of proving their entitlement, both under the statute that provides the potential ability for an exemption, and also our Constitution. Specifically, the taxpayer would have to prove that the parcel is exclusively used for charitable purposes. It's far from a foregone conclusion that any portion of the CDH development agreement would have ever been exempt from property tax. It was certainly clearer for the trial court to presume that and essentially analyze this case under a hypothetical state of facts rather than the actual facts, which are CDH expressly agreed that all of these properties would remain on the tax rolls and they wouldn't even attempt to seek an exemption. I'd also point out with respect to this issue and the growth, the development agreement itself, the terms, plain language of the development agreement, provides that the project, quote, the project will serve as an anchor and the catalyst for town center development and will generate a significant increase in property tax and sales revenue, end quote. There's no doubt that the development agreement here generated precisely the type of growth and investment and development from private enterprise contemplated by the TIF Act. Regardless, even if this was a factor that the court could have considered, this development agreement was not exclusively about parking, despite the village's attempts to make this entire case about parking. Four of the six buildings CDH is developing are standalone retail buildings that could never be tax exempt, and there's no claim that any portion could potentially be tax exempt by the village in this case. With respect to the other two buildings, mixed-use buildings under the development agreement, the parking deck itself, the entire first floor is approximately just over 23,000 square feet of commercial and retail use. Again, no basis for even assuming that there could be potential exemption for that portion, and the village doesn't claim that in this case. Likewise, the medical office building has mixed use on the first floor as well. No claim that that portion would ever be exempt from property tax. The village doesn't claim that. So even if the court could have engaged in this hypothetical scenario to analyze the plain language of the TIF Act, it's clear that substantial growth in property tax revenue still would have flowed even if there had been an application for exemption from CDH, which there was not. Just to circle back on the but-for test, the statute also requires that the village make findings of fact documenting that the but-for test is met and include evidence in the development plan. There simply was none here. The development plan adopted by the village makes no mention of all of this private investment and development activity that was occurring through the CDH development agreement. And it simply contains conclusory and vague findings unsupported by fact. Indeed, the village's own TIF consultant admitted at his deposition that the following statement in the redevelopment plan is not accurate. Quote, the area has been burdened with a lack of significant private investment and or development, end quote. There was no rational basis for the village to make this finding that TIF District 2 satisfied the but-for test. We also address the issue of whether the TIF Act satisfies a substantial benefit and contiguity requirement. I'll briefly touch on that issue. The village seems to argue that they don't need to meet that requirement at the outset. But if you look at the plain language of the statute, it specifically says that no redevelopment project area shall be designated unless, and then it goes on to say that the area shall only include those contiguous parcels of real property and improvements substantially benefited by the proposed redevelopment plan. It's simply not true. There's no statutory support for the idea that the village could simply put parcels in and then 20 years down the road justify and defend how these parcels are going to benefit. Thank you.
Go ahead. If you can wrap up your last
Yeah, time. I will just say with that, I would rest on our briefs on the other issues we raise on appeal, and I will reserve for rebuttal.
Thank you. And yeah, you'll have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Smith, ready to proceed?
Good morning, everyone. May it please the court. My name is Neil Smith of the Bond Conway Law Firm. I represent Pelley Village of Winfield in this matter. Now, it comes to you today on summary judgment, of course, for Judge Chapman earlier this year and Judge Wheaton in 2022 on one issue. In 2021, the village established TIF 2. It did so by ordinance, and two of the issues that are at play today and that they found then when they adopted their ordinances is the but-for test. They made findings to establish the but-for test, and they made findings to establish that at least three of 13 conservation area eligibility factors are established. Now, I'm going to get into both of those findings, but first I want to talk about the standard of review in this case, and I didn't hear counsel talk about that. I think I know why. I think it's because it's not favorable to him. It's de novo, of course. It comes to you on summary judgment, so it's, of course, de novo review. But the prism that you have to view this case through is the prism of what the trial court was also had to view it through, and that's the clearly and convincingly standard. The village made findings in its ordinances, by ordinance, and those findings are presumed valid. They're presumptively valid. And that's a very high burden. It's the clearly and convincingly standard. What does that mean? Clear and convincing evidence is that which leaves no reasonable doubt. It is evidence that leaves the mind well satisfied of the truth of a proposition, strikes all minds alike as being unquestionable, and leads to but one conclusion. Now, wrapping this up, the prism that you have to view this through, in order for the village, in order for the school districts to withstand the village's summary judgment motion and to win, for that matter, to win their own summary judgment motion, they were required to present evidence such that the reasonable trier of fact could find that they have established by clear and convincing evidence that the village's but-for and eligibility findings were wrong. They don't do that. I'll start first with the but-for test. Really, their only evidence is the development agreement itself. And that's no evidence at all. Because the development agreement with CDH was part of the plan. The but-for test says you look at TIF area on the whole. Has it been subject to growth and development through investment by private enterprise? And would it not reasonably be anticipated to develop without the adoption of the TIF? Courts have said that this growth and development, that is growth and development that increases the value and the tax basis of the property. And that was very critical to Judge Chapman below in his order. Because when the village met as a legislative body, they were faced with just CDH. CDH's footprint is there in Winfield is massive. And it butts right up against their town center area, the town center area where they desire to have a pedestrian-oriented downtown, shops and restaurants, place that people walk to and patronize. So they're butting up against each other. And CDH has made it well known for a long time that they are critically short on parking. They don't have the parking necessary to that other hospitals in the area have. They're critically short. So the village was faced with development that was only parking development. So what did they do? They made part of the plan is to enter into a development agreement with Central DuPage Hospital.
So, and maybe I could narrow this in. So obviously, in this area, you used that leverage, understandably, that you had with the hospital. They needed parking bad. I'm gathering that from all sides. So you used it to cut a good deal with the city and get additional benefits in the way of development. The issue to me seems that there are 24, and I'm bad with math, 25 parcels left, right? The issue is, correct me, in the issue, the parcels that are left, was there evidence that those are not going to develop? I understand that the other side's saying, look at what the hospital did. It can't be denied. It developed without, you know, necessarily the TIF. But the rest of the parcels, is there evidence that those, without a TIF, they're just going to sit there? They're not going to be able to progress and move to where the village wants them to be for this development plan.
And there is that evidence. And the evidence is that the decades-long failure of the private sector alone to bring about commercial development there. The village has had a TIF 1 in place in 2004. And the property in TIF 2 was formerly in TIF 1. But TIF 1 only brought about development that was TIF incentivized development. Condo units and a commercial structure. So one of the findings the village made that development's not going to come about, except for the TIF, is the historical evidence that they had, that they had lived with. I mean, they're village representatives in that town. They know well that there's a two-decade failure of the private sector alone to bring about development. So that was one of the components of that but-for test. The other is the conservancy factors themselves. I mentioned before, the village has to find at least 3 of 13 factors are satisfied, and it's those factors also that contribute to the finding, because these factors are here. These are going to drag down the prospects of the area to develop. So that's the findings. I hope that answers your question. And again, the prism is clearly and convincingly wrong here also. So with those findings having been made, also with knowing what CDH desires is tax-exempt parking, the village board made a decision. They made a decision to adopt this TIF. And as it turns out, not part of their findings when they made it, because it couldn't be, but it is very much played out that TIF is needed. There is a developer waiting in the wings, Synergy Development, waiting in the wings to develop a nearly 150-unit apartment building right in TIF 2. That says we need TIF incentives to go forward. The only way we're going forward is with TIF incentives. There is a bakery that has said, we're happy to locate here, but the only way we can do it, we need TIF incentives. And so those have played out even after the village made their legislative findings, that the but-for test.
When you said the village kind of already tipped its hand then on that issue?
Pardon me?
When you said the village had already tipped its hand at that point, if they came in after the fact that you made it public, you were creating a TIF district, and they came in and said, who wouldn't if you're a business?
My comment to that is that even the school district's own expert noted that the TIF he sees, developers come in and say, I'd like to build here, but you have to give me a TIF first. I don't see a great distinction there with developers. Developers, if there's a TIF, you know, and they look for incentives. But even if there's not a TIF, developers, the ones that are coming in and doing transformative things know about TIF, and they know how to politically push for that.
Yeah, why couldn't they do transformative things under TIF 1?
Well, they did do a few things on TIF 1. And the things that happened were because of TIF 1. There was a condo development on a formerly industrial site that was vacant and underutilized, non-utilized for decades. And then there was another commercial development. So TIF 1 did do big things, but it didn't. But the only things that happened in the downtown were because of TIF 1. TIF 1's expiring.
Yeah, but I mean, let's look at the developer. Couldn't he or she or it have benefited under TIF 1?
Could they have developed?
So, I mean, how does that add to TIF 2, the palatability of TIF 2, if they could have had same or similar benefits under TIF 1?
Well, TIF 1 is expiring. TIF 1 is going to end in 2027, and so developers looking for a long-term incentive. Okay.
That answers my question.
Yeah, it's ending. Yeah, and I heard the school district talk about, well, why couldn't the village just extend TIF 1? But the legislature won't extend TIFs for another 12 years unless the school districts agree. And as you can see, they're here litigating this. There was no agreement to be had. So TIF 2 was the option. So they, so the evidence found by the village ordinance, and also even after the village made its findings, all point to development is only going to happen with the TIF, with incentives. And again, their only evidence is not evidence at all. It's the development agreement. It's the development agreement that, as Judge Chapman noted, is part of the plan. It's part of the village's plan here. Now, one of the other factors the village had defined was the conservation area eligibility factors. This is the three of the 13 conservation area factors listed. You have to satisfy at least three. The village found at least five. The village board found five. Judge Chapman agreed there was no question of material fact of at least three of those. That's why he granted summary judgment. Those are declining lagging EAD, an objective issue. That's just an objective issue. That's crunching numbers. Chapman found in favor of the village there. The obsolescence factor, I think for the obsolescence factor, the village's expert, the best way I've described it is it was a non-opinion. And he really couldn't say one way or the other whether it was there or not. He quibbled with the village's efforts, but he couldn't say one way or the other whether it was there or not. It was a non-opinion. Same, too, with the deleterious land use and layout finding. Their expert, it was a non-opinion. He couldn't say one way or the other whether it was there or not. He had his quibbles. He had his, said he would have done it a different way, but he couldn't find that it wasn't there. And again, their burden, the prism you're looking through here, the clearly inconvincing evidence doesn't even come close. The deterioration factor. The village found deterioration on the building, the surface improvements. Becker, their expert, acknowledged deterioration, some deterioration. And Judge Chapman found in favor of the village because, again, the burden of proof here, they don't satisfy. Yeah, and then the final conservancy area factor, lack of community planning. As Judge Chapman noted, the development happening before the comprehensive plan of the village was enacted, so kind of unguided development earlier in the village's history. Inadequate street and intersection issues. The school district expert couldn't rule out incompatible uses. And he acknowledged traffic backups and intersection issues. And again, Judge Chapman ruled in the village's favor on this one. So Judge Chapman, in his view, the village had established three out of those 13, and he had made those. I'm going to address one thing that the schools didn't get to, and that's the DTIF, RETIF issue. Judge Wheaton ruled in the school district's favor, or the village's favor, a long time ago in 2022 on this issue. This was a pretty straightforward legal issue, and basically the village took property out of TIF 1 and put it in TIF 2. The school district has a problem with this issue, but they cite not a single place where it is prohibited. And in fact, I mean, it's allowed. The TIF Act says property that is not in a TIF can be in a TIF. And you have to and what they ignore here, the school districts ignore here, is that when you take property out of TIF 1, because TIF 1 has been frozen, the EAD for TIF 1 has been frozen since 2004. You take it out of TIF 1, and now the EAD comes up to present values. So it was then frozen at the 2021 values. So it's not a continuation on of TIF 1. It's a new TIF. It's property in a new TIF that's frozen at 2021 levels. They don't... There's no statutory authority. The village was fully able to do that, and you can imagine the public policy harms that would come about if the village couldn't do that. It'd be a one and done situation. Property is TIF once; it can never be TIF again, no matter how blighted or much it needs development. Lastly, I want to talk about the inclusion of the 11 parcels north. High Lake Road there, and
is that the contiguity issue?
It's the contiguity, kind of the shorthand we've used here, but really, it's really not a contiguity question. I mean, there's no question that this TIF is contiguous, the property is contiguous. Really, it's about if you excise these 11 parcels from the TIF, would the TIF be contiguous? No, but that's the same, that's the case it is with any TIF, so there's no statutory authority there for their argument. So I'll take any questions if there are.
Sure. Justice Anderson, do you have any questions?
I do not.
Okay. Thank you, Neil. 5 minutes. This is your last call. Okay. We have no further questions.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Counsel?
All right. I'll start with the standard, the clear and convincing evidence, the argument counsel made that the development agreement, according to counsel, the development agreement with CDH is not evidence at all. I take great issue with that. It's clearly evidence. It's the very evidence the but-for test asks us to look at. And if I understand the village's argument, their argument is that the school districts have not marshaled clear and convincing evidence to defeat the but-for test. But all we have to do is, again, look back at the Village of Burr Ridge and Castell Properties cases. In those cases, there was merely development interest. It hadn't even happened. It was commercial interest in development that the village either blocked or it didn't go forward. And the trial court and appellate court in both of those cases found that was more than enough evidence to defeat the but-for test. The evidence we've marshaled here is much stronger than that. We have a $90 million development agreement that's signed, sealed, delivered, and well underway 14 months prior to the TIF 2 being created. There's absolutely clear and convincing evidence in this case. There's 12 building permits that were issued in the years leading up to this. Ample investment by CDH to buy properties in the area for purposes of development. There's ample and clear and convincing evidence to defeat the but-for test. I'd also like to address the question that was raised earlier about what about the remaining parcels? And one thing that really hasn't been focused on here is, and we identified this in our brief, and we identified it in the trial court, the ownership, there's 51 parcels in TIF 2. CDH owned 34 of those parcels. And the development agreement was covering 26 of the 51. What's left over, there's a Chase Bank, covers about two parcels, an active business, and there's a restaurant that's also an active business in terms of the privately owned property. The remaining parcels, 14 parcels that are left, are all owned by governmental bodies, including the village, the fire district, the forest preserve, and the regional transit authority. Why is that important? We don't expect governmentally owned parcels to attract private investment and development. They're not being used for private purposes. So it's clear here that the but-for test, even if you look at the project area as a whole, clearly was not met by the TIF 2 ordinances adopted by the village. Council mentioned the synergy and development interest in the bakery. As we've argued before, under the plain language of the statute, it would be error to even consider those. Clearly, it's not surprising that somebody would go to the village and ask for TIF assistance, but the legal issue that's important here is that the statutory but-for test, which the village conceded in the trial court, by its plain language, looks at the state of the project area at the time the ordinances were adopted. Specifically, the but-for test asks whether the project area has been subject to. That's past tense. It's looking backwards and at that point in time. It also asks, can we anticipate at the time the TIF district is created that development would occur without TIF? It's a point-in-time analysis by the plain language of the statute. Regardless, even if it could be considered, the synergy proposal is in the far east corner of this TIF 2 area. And it cannot be used, A, because it came about 2 years after the fact. But more importantly, it doesn't create a basis to find that the project area as a whole would not develop without TIF when you look at the CDH development agreement.
It seems to me that some of these issues that you consider in connection with the but-for test seem kind of fact-intensive, and it almost seems counterintuitive to me that it would be de novo review. And I know there's some dispute between the two of you in the briefs as to review. Why wouldn't it be something other than de novo? There are some factual determinations, right?
Sure.
I mean, it seems like a fact-intensive inquiry.
Sure. And the reason it's de novo on the procedural posture of this case is because the trial court's ruling came on cross motions
summary
for summary
judgment. Which again, it seems counterintuitive to me that this could be handled on summary judgment. I know it happens. It just seems odd to me.
Yeah, well, it happened here. I mean, if you look at the cases which we've cited, some are decided on summary judgment, some are decided after trial. So it certainly can happen either way. In this case, Judge Chapman chose to make that ruling on summary judgment, which presents the de novo issue for us today.
You had very little time left, but I took it up with a question. I don't know if...
That's okay. I'll take any other questions. Those were the main points I wanted to hit.
Thank you. Okay. I have no questions. All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. Thank both of you for your arguments. We will take a recess, and we will get you a decision in due course. Thank you.